Today is Thursday and time to read from your letters.
As Daniel Swerdling reported earlier this week, his investigative story on the abuse of immigrant detainees may have prompted an official response. A day after Swerdling's initial story aired, the Department of Homeland Security sent a memo to all of its facilities ordering them to stop using dogs around detainees. And we received several letters of congratulations for that this week.
Laura Moss Gottlieb of Madison, Wisconsin wrote, "I can't tell you how proud I was of Daniel Swerdling and NPR when I heard that. I had been utterly appalled to hear of this practice when he first reported it, and was delighted to see it corrected once it had been exposed. Daniel Swerdling's report stands as a shining example of how good journalism and good citizenship should be practiced."
And Sue Townsend and Jill Shipman of Dallas, Texas sent this, "Surely one of the primary functions of the free press in a democracy is to serve as a watchdog over those who would abuse individuals detained by our government for whatever reason. Mr. Swerdling has fulfilled that function with passion and grace."
Then there was Walter Cronkite's reminiscence of a journalistic failure. He described his embarrassing role as anchor when CBS covered an extravagant party thrown by Mike Todd and Elizabeth Taylor in 1957. Mike Todd managed to convince the network to pay for the broadcast of the party, which devolved into a food fight. And Cronkite said Todd's self-promotional genius spawned something now known as event marketing and the institution of the infomercial.
Barbara Motes of Los Angeles reflects, "After hearing this story, it seems that the state of news reporting hasn't changed much. Is there a difference between treating the Mike Todd party as newsworthy in 1957 and television stations reporting about their network's TV shows during the news in 2004?
Glenn Kingery of Austin, Texas suggested we too fell in Mike Todd's trap. "I was amazed as to what passes as news," Mr. Kingery says. "Think about it. If it wasn't all that great live, why on earth dredge it up again and tell how bad it was? A total waste of airtime."
We got mail about our interview with the man President Bush pardoned for a crime he committed in 1963. Listener David Dunbar called Michelle on the carpet over this sentence.
"You're on leave from Biloxi, you're in Pensacola, and you gotta get back quick or you're gonna be in trouble, and you spot this pink Cadillac with the keys in the ignition." Dunbar writes that I grossly mispronounced the name of that Mississippi town. He says, "Surely NPR has enough wealth to afford a pronouncing geographical dictionary. Why can't you Yankees get this thing right?" Well, indeed, we Northerners do tend to say Biloxi.
Since Michelle hails from Minnesota, we called the Minneapolis Public Library to demonstrate that point.
"My name is Ryan Curry. I would pronounce that word Biloxi."
But it turns out I was wrong. We couldn't reach David Dunbar, but we called Pee Wee Superette, a Mississippi supermarket, to get the right pronunciation.
"My name's Selena Harrington. I'm from Biloxi, Mississippi."
So, Michelle, that's Biloxi, not Biloxi.
I stand corrected. It's Biloxi.
Finally, yesterday we aired the story of a California man who raised a 10-foot Grinch in his front yard. His neighbors had complained about his extravagant Christmas decorations last year. Bill Hahn of Orangeburg, New York, wrote us this response.
"Your report has got to be not only a glorious waste of airtime, but awfully one-sided if you're going to talk about a nonsensical dispute among neighbors. I have my own crazy ones, and they are of no interest to anyone but me."
We're interested in your thoughts. You can email them to atc@npr.org. Please let us know where you're writing from and how you pronounce your name.
"You're a monster, Mr. Grinch."
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.